Welcome to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. I'm Marcellus Wiley. Coming up, we'll tell you if LeBron is about to reignite the GOAT conversation and if Jameis Winston has a lot on his mind in terms of him being one of the greatest of all time. Interesting. But first, we have some huge show news for SFY. Listen to my new co-host, my man, Emmanuel Acho.
It is physically impossible to be more excited than I am to join Fox's Speak for Yourself. Literally a dream come true. Partnering with my big bro, Marcellus Wiley. Gonna be delivering funny, informational, educational, sports opinions. It's gonna be a privilege to be watched by y'all, but more importantly, a privilege to serve y'all. So I can't wait to get to it. I'll see y'all soon.
He'll be here soon, man. Can't wait to welcome Emmanuel Acho to the family. And who is he? Man, it's funny to say this. This is a friend who's been a friend for a while. He would like to say that he's a mentee of mine, but it's just a young talent who's tremendously invested in what he does, always prepared, energetic. And I just look forward to welcoming him to the Speak for Yourself family and all the energy he's going to bring. See you in a second, Acho. All right, right now I'm joined by my other cats, my other dogs. You know who they are, LeVar Arrington and Tequil Spikes, guys. And we're going to start off in New England right now. Where yesterday Robert Kraft announced the first portion of a pledge, $1 million to social justice causes in a virtual ceremony honoring the Patriots' Devin McCourty. But if you listen to Kraft's remarks, sounds like McCourty wasn't the only player on his mind last night. What you got to say, Kraft?
You could even see that fellow, I forget his name, who used to play quarterback who left. He really wishes he was still with you here. I could hear it in his voice. But, you know, whatever happens, happens.
Tequila, you think Kraft's gotten over Brady leaving New England?
I think he has, though. He sees the big picture. Look, when you look at what he's been able to do, or the lack of what Brady was able to do 3 years after he turned 40, they saw that he had the least amount of pass yards, the lowest his completion percentage has ever been, and also the lack of not having a lot of TDs. And so when you see that as ownership, as a business move, you have to do what's best for the body. I'm not saying that Tom Brady doesn't have any work by no stretch of the imagination, but I think ultimately overall, when you look at what they were able to do over a 20-year time period, 6 Super Bowl wins, when you look at the tandem together, being able to have the most playoff wins as a head coach and quarterback, the most Super Bowl wins, and then the most playoff wins, I think it's fair to say that, you know what, I can wash my hands with this because I've gotten all I could get out of this relationship.
You know, I got to say no. And the reason why I say no is purely from the football perspective of it. This is like grieving a loss, right? Like the personal relationship of it is fine. But when you think about what they have built through the years between Robert and Tom, it's going to have to be Robert Kraft going through a season before he can get over it. It's going to be, you know, when you lose that loved one, it hurts the most on their birthdays. It hurts the most on holidays, Christmas time, different things like that. I started immediately thinking there's probably a routine that Tom Brady and Robert Kraft had on Fridays, on Saturdays, on Sundays. What was his pregame deal, pregame meals? What were those conversations? What was it like for Robert Kraft traveling to the stadium? What was he thinking about as it applied to Tom? Sitting in his owner's box, what was his routine before he watched Tom Brady do what he did? So I think until Robert Kraft relives those moments connected to all of those amazing years of being with Tom Brady, there's no way he could even possibly begin to say he's over Tom Brady being gone, Marcellus.
Oh, man, I think he's certainly moved on in terms of Tom Brady being in a Patriots uniform. Absolutely. It's one of the fundamental traits of success, the ability to compartmentalize. And that's what you're going to see right here in terms of his mindset going forward. Even if he has to force that as an effort, he still has to get to that place. And you know why? Because the only thing that you value more than winning is more winning. The only thing you value more than money is more money. And there's no more winning in money and investing your energy into Tom Brady. He's gone. So you got to think about it from that perspective going forward. And who was Tom Brady last seen to Bill Belichick and to Bob Kraft? This was a guy who won an MVP at the age of 40. But since 2017, all of his major metrics were in decline. Like, keep it real. Let's not just talk about Brady at his height. Let's talk about Brady when he was last seen on that field. Yes, lack of weapons around him, but still Tom Brady wasn't living up to even his own name of being Tom Brady. So the only way that Kraft can stay is invested in this team and as committed to this team and their success going forward is to let go of the past. A lot of people in this world are scared to dance on the grave of someone. They're like, oh, it's too soon. We always see it, hashtag too soon. But you know what the flip of that is? It's time to move on. I understand you got to give the production at times of how heartfelt the loss is. But in reality, you got to build going forward. We should learn something from our pandemic and all of our text messages where everybody expected you to be down because everything was going down around you. Sometimes you got to be greater than your circumstances to move forward.
Yeah, and I agree with you too, Celis, because another even factor, another point that factors into this is when you look at who is the guy who is in waiting, who is the backup quarterback? Well, everybody knows Jarrett Stidham is going to be that guy. He has shown promise when you talk to a lot of guys coming out of that locker room to where, you know what, this could be another person in the making. I'm not saying six championships down the line, but a guy who understands the pedigree, spent some time up under Tom Brady to learn and see what he does on a consistent basis. And so, like you said, I couldn't agree with you more. When you're running this type of organization, you really have to sit back, look at the numbers, and say, you know what? Who carries the most weight going forward, leading this team back to another championship? Yeah. And that boils down to Coach Belichick.
I still got to push back on you guys because I think you guys are separating the sentimental value connected to all of this. And I get looking at the numbers and placing it on the field. But again, when you look at what this relationship has meant, what it has meant to the team and to the city, I just don't think that it's as simple as saying, oh, we're going to move on. We got to rebuild. Here comes Stidham. We're good. Let's keep, you know, he's not making us any money anymore. His production is going down. No. I don't think that we have to make this into a negative. And I almost feel like it's a negative connotation to say, I'm not over my guy being gone. It's not a negative to say that I'm not over it. You know what? If Stidham doesn't do well and they're losing games, you know, I know the first thing that Robert Kraft's going to be sitting there while he's in his owner's box. I wonder if we would have won with Tom, even if Tom isn't playing that well.
Oh, man.
Everything is going to be related. It's going to be related back to Tom. So in order for him to be able to really get through this and get over it and look at it from the perspective that you guys are presenting, I think he's going to have to live it before he can say, you know what? I am definitely over it. We have moved on at the right time. I feel good about it. I think the sentimental value of it outweighs everything that's being discussed right now.
Great point in terms of don't make it a negative, but I give it to you realer than that. I personalize it, and I know you guys can certainly relate. Y'all know I've been engaged four different times before being happily married like I've been for the last 5 years. But let me tell you, every single time I had those breakups, I was at that club that night. I was moving on, brother. That night, I was in them streets trying to say, you know what, it's time to move forward. And then there is a lonely Wednesday here and there, and you're like, ah. Eating a bowl of chili, watching some reruns, like, oh, I miss her. But you know what? You still move forward. And that's Bob Kraft right now. He's moving forward. He's at the club. He's in the streets already moving past what Tom Brady represented to them because you got to look at it. He's the owner of the next man up mentality. Don't get caught up in the good cop, bad cop relationship that's happening in New England. And we know Belichick's the bad cop. But who empowers Belichick? Who's the owner? Where's all of this power coming from in terms of resources and bank account? That's Bob Kraft. Bob Kraft is a mastermind in terms of having cover because of Bill Belichick doing all the dirty work. And then Bob Kraft could come around and hug everybody. I love all you guys. Hey, you know what? It was an amazing experience. But trust me, Behind the Veil, Bob Kraft has moved on. Coming up, LeBron is about to take aim at another NBA title, but does he have his eyes on an even bigger title? Find out. Next, Speak for Yourself is presented by Hyundai. Time now for a big story sponsored by Fisher Investments. Clearly better money management. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself in the Crib, Marcellus Wiley. Joined now by a couple of Fox NBA analysts, Slick Rick Dubuque and Jim Jackson. Let's move to the king, LeBron James, who is getting ready for the season relaunch next month and is looking to make yet another title run with the Lakers team that had it all clicking when the season was shut down back in March. After the Last Dance documentary, there's a lot of talk that LeBron would never catch MJ in the GOAT debate. But leading the Lakers to a title in this unprecedented season will be a pretty major accomplishment. So, Jim, you think another ring would reignite the GOAT debate for LeBron?
First of all, I'm going to go back to you in your streets when you was dating and didn't know what to do out there at the club, Marcellus. That part right there. We got to work.
You were there, too. Right? I remember seeing you.
I'm glad you married and got the kids now, so I'm happy for you, and I'm glad you stepped up. Okay. But here's my thing on the whole thing. LeBron is always going to be in the conversation. I don't care if he doesn't win another one. Winning one more, would it solidify? Yes. But I always go back to this, and I'll keep it real simple. It's who controls in writing this narrative, okay? Because 5, 10, 15 years from now, the people who are writing, you know, the journalists who are taking these surveys, these lists, and putting them together are the ones that actually probably had a chance to just watch LeBron play. They didn't have an opportunity to watch Michael Jordan play. I think what happened is, even as this debate fires on right now, what Last Dance gave us, gave a lot of young people who knew Michael Jordan because of the brand and maybe the video game, but didn't really know the backdrop of who he was, that allowed people to give a sneak peek of who Michael Jordan was and why a lot of us who grew up with him in his era consider him the great. So LeBron will always be in the conversation because he's accomplished so much over his 17-year career. He still has 3 or 4 more years to go. But I will always say this. It was once a time when Wilt was considered the best. It was once a time Kareem, you know, Magic was in there. Those narratives did shift because the people who were able to create these narratives, they changed. And unfortunately, at times, they didn't get a chance to witness Michael Jordan. They got a chance to just see LeBron at his best.
The debate is not ongoing. The debate never should have started. But once we trotted out the Last Dance, everyone who had started that argument went, oh, wait a minute. Our bad. We should have never. What? We didn't know. We were going by statistics. We were going by numbers. We were going by number of finals appearances. We had no idea. You are the GOAT, and we won't continue this conversation. So, no. LeBron winning another championship, winning it under these circumstances, is not going to reignite it. It isn't going to continue it. It isn't going to make him the greatest of all time. And I don't even want to go to numbers or statistics or 6 out of 6, any of that. Watching Michael Jordan play the game, watching Michael Jordan play the game every night and comparing the two, you understand where the numbers came from. It wasn't that Michael couldn't have been a top assist getter. It was a function of playing in the triangle that created the numbers. The bottom line was Michael did whatever was necessary, whenever necessary, to win the game. And as we know, we haven't always seen that from LeBron James. Doesn't make him not an all-time great. It just doesn't make him a GOAT. What he can achieve right now, what he can achieve right now is to prove that he is the mentally toughest player in the league currently. And I'm not even sure people would necessarily give him that over guys like Kawhi Leonard. But that is something that he can achieve because ultimately the superstar that gets this done will be the guy who is the mentally toughest. That's going to be the biggest challenge under the current circumstances.
Boy, talking about living up to your name, Slick Rick. Boy, that was slick how you try to just take us to a different place, Mr. Bucher. In reality, this is an ongoing conversation because of merit, because LeBron has played himself into that same conversation. This is just more ammunition to stoke that fire which is the GOAT debate. LeBron James will retire with more points than Michael Jordan, more rebounds than like a Ben Wallace, and more assists than Magic Johnson. And you're trying to say, forget the statistics, forget the numbers. I gave you some names as well. This guy is going to be a facilitator first and have more points than the guy who selfishly went out there and just wanted to score the basketball until he got a crew around him, a system to support him, and then figured it out. Oh, I do need my teammates. And let's talk about LeBron and the lack of teammates that he had early in his career, but still went to the finals with Captain Crunch and Count Chocula. He went out there and went to the finals with nothing else around him, brother. Wow. Michael Jordan in his first few years, when he didn't have anything around him, swept out the first round, losing in the first round. So if you really want to do this comparison, they're both amazing. They're both in the conversation. But to dismiss LeBron because, he has the numbers, but what about the accolades? I think we're doing ourselves a disservice if we're going to approach it that way.
You know what, Marcellus, you make a good point in this. In regards to, you have to include LeBron in the conversation because of his body of work. I mean, whether you like LeBron or not,
yes,
he's proven over his 17-year period, we haven't seen an athlete play the game the way he's played it. Again, a natural facilitator is probably going to end up, if he stays healthy, will pass Kareem Abdul-Jabbar as the all-time leading scorer in the league. Again, number of years, of course, but his ability to put the ball in the hoop. And to Rick, you made my point. When you talked about what you saw on the court with Michael Jordan versus what you saw versus LeBron, you were able to witness that ferocity of Michael Jordan. 15 years from now, people writing that story who never saw Michael Jordan play, all they're going to see is clip. They're going to remember what they saw from LeBron. So the way that you're a journalist and writing stories are the same way the people 15 years from now, when this conversation comes up, is going to lean towards a LeBron James, because that's who they were able to witness. That's the difference. We know it. We saw it. But those young people didn't get a chance to experience like us, Rick.
Jim, I can't be responsible for the knuckleheads that are going to follow me 15 years from now.
You got to be. You got to change the story, bro. You got to do it.
So, but here's the thing. The numbers, again. The endurance that LeBron has demonstrated, and he certainly take advantage of the way the game is played today. But let's face facts. The numbers are inflated because the game is played in a different way today than it was in Jordan's heyday. So, I it's not that I'm dismissing the numbers, but I do devalue them to a certain extent in terms of comparing the two and saying, well, LeBron was a better this because he has more of this. I think it's a function of, sure, his durability, how long he's played, but also the way the game is played in the league today. And I'm sorry, but the endurance element of it, we would be talking about Cal Ripken being one of the greatest baseball players ever, but we don't. We admire his durability and his endurance, but we don't necessarily look at his skill set and say he's one of the greatest. So, look, The Last Dance, it got real quiet from this entire debate. You stated it, Marcellus. We'd have to reignite this conversation in order to get this going again. And I'm telling you, having to reignite it, it's not going to happen in this shortened season.
I didn't reignite it. It was an insecurity for Michael Jordan.
I'm reading the screen right here. Lakers winning title this season, reignite LeBron Jordan GOAT debate. We got to get that thing started up again because The Last Dance freaking killed it.
I am talking for the naysayers. For me, he's already in the GOAT conversation. Sorry for talking down to, as you say, the knuckleheads. Let me talk from my point of view exclusively. Michael Jordan greenlit this project the day the Cavs won the championship after being down 3-1 to a 73-win team. Coincidence? I think not, because he's sitting there like, man, look at this dude. If this goes how I think it could, he gonna come from my throne. So do not act like Michael Jordan didn't even feel this conversation, because why greenlight a project when you've been sitting there retired for almost two decades? Interesting. This is a guy, LeBron James, when you talk about watching him in his totality of performance and then watching it contrast against who Michael Jordan was playing against, the level of play was different back then. The athlete was different back then. I don't like to take shots necessarily because, hey, you only could do what you're working with. But it was some Amazon truck drivers out there back when Jordan was playing. Guys who couldn't even move laterally. Some guys still looking at the ball with one hand to the point that when Tim Hardaway finally crossed someone over, we lost our minds. Oh, my God, you mean the ball could go from one hand to the other? That's his error. You have to take that into consideration.
Hold wait. Marcel, that was my error, too. So hold up now.
Now you touch
a sensitive bone right now when you're talking about that part of it. Now, because you had athletes, wasn't as spread out as it was today. But no, here's the thing I always say about when you try to control and contrast error. Take a Steph Curry. People always say, well, could Steph play back in the day? He'll get beat up. I say, well, no. Michael Adams, okay, under 6 feet, maybe 5'5". Muggsy Bogues, Spud Webb. Okay, it was guys that were small that played just as well. Isaiah was 6'1", that played just as well in that era. You know why? They grew up in that era playing that physical basketball, so they were accustomed to it. So you can't say a guy couldn't play back then but can play now, or vice versa. If Michael grew up playing in this era, he would be a different player. He would shoot more threes. He probably wouldn't post up as much, but the mental part of his game would allow him to be successful. So I try to tell people all the time, when you contrast times, eras, you got to put into effect somebody would play the game a lot differently than what they're doing right now based on how they grew up.
See, I knew this argument was going to shift. It's not that to restart it, you have to take it someplace else because you've seen Michael play now. You've seen it full breadth from the beginning to the end. And now we can't argue who's the better player. Now we got to go, well, look who he played against and look at the number, like the all these other elements. If you just take Michael Jordan, the player, you look at the footwork, you look at the fundamentals, you look at the entire ability, and you look how he brought it every single night, regardless of who he was playing against or who he was playing with. In those, yeah, you're going to take the Boston Celtics, one of the all-time great teams, and he gets swept by them, and you're going to compare it to who LeBron James was playing against in the Eastern Conference? Two people can play that game. I don't want to go there. I'm not going to go there. I'm just going to look at the two of them as basketball players and go, oh, yeah, that guy's the real deal. This guy's really, really good. Best I've seen in what he does, but he ain't that guy.
You're not going to go there, Rick, but you just went there. Like, go where you need to go. I'm ready to run. I got on my running shoes. I'm ready for this marathon. I can give it to you. Let me give it to you this way. Michael Jordan is a cobra, and LeBron James is a boa constrictor. Michael Jordan is going to strike perfect in the finals, and you're going to just have, like, unblemished success. But you look at LeBron, that boa constrictor who's touching every stat line on that stat sheet all around is going to take his time to circle his prey. It's going to take his time to pull you in. But it's going to be the same fate, brother, whether you strike me like Jordan or you just take your time to suffocate me till I come to the realization of who you are. This argument reminds me of every time we were in the locker room talking about who's the greatest running back of all time. And I was like, are we really going to have this conversation? It's Barry Sanders. But then all you would hear, because sports fans are prisoners of when they were impressionable, those younger years, when you were still buying sneakers and listening to music before you can go out and try and break curfew. Those years. So when I say Barry Sanders, I kept hearing Jim Brown because of folklore and him playing against those little tiny linemen out there. And I would hear Emmitt Smith. Because Emmitt Smith had the 3 rings. Brother, I don't want to get into a folklore conversation or a championship deficit conversation because that conversation is for team accomplishment, not individuals. When you ask me who's the greatest running back, it's Barry Sanders. When you ask me who's the greatest basketball player, it's Michael James. Jordan, LeBron. I'm not sure yet. Coming up, Jameis Winston is making a fresh start in New Orleans, but he's also making some pretty outlandish statements. We'll tell you what to make of them next. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai, Marcel Swally, joined once again by LeVar Arrington and Tequil Spikes. Let's move to New Orleans, y'all, where Jameis Winston is trying to start over after a disappointing run in Tampa. The former top pick may not have lived up to expectations, but he still got plenty of confidence in himself, maybe a little too much confidence, some say. In a new profile in Bleacher Report, Jameis didn't hold back, explaining, quote, I know what I'm worth, and I know day in and day out, without publicly coming in and saying it, that historically, I'm one of the best quarterbacks to play the game. Woo, Tequila. You like this confidence from Jameis?
Marcellus, I do not like this confidence. I don't like this statement. I love this statement. And this is the reason why. You look at what he was able to do last year. He knew he was not going to be benched at all. And he was able to put up numbers, the eighth most in NFL history when it comes to passing in a single season. And, like, I want to talk about this, and this is something that people really sleep on. He talked about starting earlier this offseason, changing his diet, which he turned into a vegan, also lost 17 pounds, also took it another step, and went and got LASIK surgery. So now, is he the first quarterback to ever do that from an offseason change? Probably not. But my point is that I'm saying is that it takes a certain mindset to be able to adapt that type of theory. You have to have that mindset to be able to make everybody who's looking at you from the outside looking in say, nothing matters to this young man because the only thing that he wants to do is to play football. And that's what I see, that's what I hear by him being in New Orleans, especially up under Drew Brees, to really be able to see, okay, now I can see why I took chances and why I should not take chances. So I love what he's saying, and I'm sure every teammate on the Saints love his addition.
Yeah, I'm with you, BTM, on this one. Listen, I feel like his resume does enough talking for him. It speaks for him. All right, you're talking about a national champion winner in college, a Heisman Trophy winner in college, a number one overall draft pick in the National Football League, and has thrown for crazy numbers in the league. And some will say, crazy numbers of interceptions. For some strange reason, I guess maybe it's the crab legs or something that has happened with Jameis Winston eating W's or whatever. But we started to act as though Jameis Winston is not someone we should take seriously. It's almost like he's the running punchline of a joke. You say Jameis Winston, and it's like, let's start laughing about it. Like, I don't get that. I don't get why it turned into that. So I like Jameis Winston's flex right now. I'm a flex on y'all. How many of these starting quarterbacks in the National Football League have the resume that Jameis Winston has? The dude that's starting in front of him is a first ballot Hall of Famer, no doubt, but doesn't have the background historical resume that Jameis Winston does. So, listen, I understand where he's coming from, and sometimes the best thing for somebody to do is to look in the mirror and remind themselves of who they really are. Could be the major difference and deciding point for Jameis going to New Orleans and starting a new chapter in his NFL career life.
Yeah, you better flex if you're Jameis Winston. Come on, man. You know why doctors walk around with such confidence? Because every time you say the name, you got to say doctor first. And it's funny, in our world, Jameis Winston, doctor, this dude is only one of five guys in NFL history to have that resume, as you talk about, Heisman Trophy, national title, number one pick overall. Like, sometimes you do have to remind people because they will forget who you are. And don't forget that his numbers, if you squint at them, like, just look, take the names away. It's a young Peyton Manning in terms of the numbers. So that's why Jameis is like, let me just flex a little bit. Because I tell all the kids all the time, man, You have to have the biggest pom-poms for yourself and shake them the loudest, because this world will flip it on you and make you wait for them to tell you the exact same thing that you already know. That's what a compliment kind of is. A compliment is, I'm going to tell you what you probably already know, but I got to say it first. You don't believe me?
Yeah.
Flip a compliment on his head like Jameis Winston just did. If you walk up to Jameis and say, oh, man, you know you're only one of five guys, he's like, oh, yeah, appreciate it. Thank you for the compliment. But Jameis finally says it first, and people are like, ah, I think he's a little too cocky. What is he thinking? What is he thinking? It's Flex. More of what has he done. The dude has done insane things and now is in a position to learn from a guy whose strength is Jameis's weakness. What to do in terms of reading and reacting to what you see out there. And that's why I'm highly interested in seeing how this one-year red shirt really turns into something special for Jameis Winston going forward. And let's talk about another quarterback, another guy dealing with high expectations, Carson Wentz. The Eagles quarterback has had an up-and-down career so far, and at times has faced a ton of criticism over his inconsistency and relationship with teammates. But the Big Lead just dropped a column arguing Wentz is actually massively underrated, claiming his health issues are overstated and pointing to some very solid numbers despite a depleted receiving core. Shaquille, you think Wentz is underrated?
I think Carson Wentz is definitely underrated. I don't think he's massively underrated. And my brother, let me educate you right quick on the reason why.
My brother.
May I?
My brother.
Okay, look.
Yes.
When you look
yes,
at his body of work, his injuries at the certain times, back in 2018, the chronic back pain, the back injury that caused him to miss a little time. And then you look at this past season, we all thought they were getting ready to take off at the end of the year in the playoff game, had some momentum, but he got knocked out by Clowney. And so when you look at this right here, a lot of times people look at it and say, you know what? He can't stay healthy. Well, I'm not going to say that because he's only missed, what, four games in his entire career? And then if you look at his, not the supporting pieces, the essential pieces, this is the reason why he's really getting that title. He has not had a 1,000-yard rusher his entire time while he's there. Now, I will tell you this straight up. If I'm a defensive guy, I already know there is no true threat for anybody to chomp us up on the ground. Therefore, I can take my extra time and now implement it in studying the certain tendencies of Carson Wentz. And he still was able to perform. That's the reason why when you look at the body of work and the production, regardless of the lack of the essential pieces, he is an underrated quarterback and a very good quarterback.
Man, they got a grown man in that backfield, Takeo, named Miles Sanders. Bad boy. Pin boy. You know what I mean? We ain't going to talk about no running game, but let's talk about Carson Wentz and get back to that, right? He's not massively underrated. I just told you the Penn Stater is in the backfield. I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. They say on the east side of the state, Wentzylvania. That's how much they love this dude, Carson Wentz, in Pennsylvania. They call it Wentzylvania on the eastern side, all right? Massively underrated. This is based upon a columnist feeling as though, a writer feeling as though, Carson Wentz should have been on this top players list. And he was denied the opportunity to be amongst the elites in the game. I don't feel as though if he's not on that list, it makes him massively underrated. He hasn't achieved or accomplished at the level that some of those guys on that list have done. Now, moving on to Carson Wentz, particularly in how we look at him as a player, he has been a consistent player. 13 interceptions is the most interceptions he's had in a season, and that was his rookie year. Yes. After that, it was only 7 the rest of the way. He protects the ball. He's always passed for over 3,000 yards, which is crazy consistent. His results have been what they have been. I think the biggest knock on him, one, we mentioned it, are the injuries. But two, people will not let it go that they won that Super Bowl with Nick Foles in the playoffs. It seems to be a cloud that continues to hang over his head, and people don't want to allow it to go. It feels as though he's got to win a Super Bowl in order for people to let it go that Nick Foles did play well in the playoffs. But Nick Foles did not play during the year. It was Carson Wentz that led them to that playoff run. I get it. Nick Foles came in and did what he needed to do as a backup. Great. But underrated? I don't think he's underrated. I think he's very appreciated. And if anything, us asking the question of is he underrated actually makes me feel like we don't need to overrate him because he hasn't achieved at the level yet where we should give him more praise than what he's deserving of.
Hey, he's underrated, man. Y'all just got to give it up the way it is. I understand that it's a moving line in terms of where you're rated because he wasn't one of the top 50 players in the league. That's just one of the things that really adds ammunition to him being underrated. Let's talk about who Carson Wentz is and why he truly is underrated. This is a guy who twice massacred his own momentum because of injury. Having an MVP year, comes out to L.A., bop, gets hurt. He was going to win the MVP that year if he just stayed the course, lost it. And then another time, he goes into the playoffs, and in the first quarter, bop, and he's done. Football stars are not born in hospitals. They're born in the playoffs. And he's never had his opportunity to go out there and live up to all the momentum that he builds in excellent play in the regular season. Think about it. Takeo points out the running game issues. How about the fact that his top three targets weren't even wide receivers? A running back and two tight ends. This is a guy who's really been putting it all together a lot on his shoulders and not getting the credit because he can't finish the deal. So when you look at it from that perspective, you start to realize Carson Wentz is kind of special. Actually, first quarterback in NFL history, three straight years, 20-plus touchdowns, and seven or fewer interceptions. Carson Wentz, if you give him what he needs, and it looks like they may have addressed it this offseason, you might have something special going forward. Coming up, the Packers drafted Jordan Love with an eye to the future, but will the pick destroy the team they've got right now? We get into that next. Speak for Yourself is presented by Hyundai. So some of our other favorite sports may be on hold. Horse racing is still running strong. Live coverage of top-tier races on FS1 and FS2 throughout June. You can enjoy horse racing from top tracks across the country all month long. Visit americasbestracing.net/strong to learn more. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Marcellus Wiley, joined once again by LeVar Arrington and Takeo Spikes. Let's move to Green Bay, where the Packers shocked the league by trading up to draft Jordan Love back in April. Aaron Rodgers admitted he was caught off guard by the move and how now one of his top offensive linemen, David Bakhtiari, I love that name, says he was surprised as well, explaining, quote, "I was more shocked that they traded up, but how I feel about the pick doesn't really matter because I'm not in charge of building up the roster." Takeo, you think the Jordan Love pick could divide the Packers locker room?
Absolutely not. And this is the reason why. I remember back in 2007, I went through something similar to this. Now, granted, Kevin Cobb, when I played with the Philadelphia Eagles, he was not a first-round pick, but everybody was surprised because they felt like they did not need a backup quarterback, and they picked Kevin Cobb with the second-round pick. Now, when you look at this same situation, I look at it overall, and I say, you know what? As long as Jordan Love can come in, be humble, and fit in and make progress, that's the only thing guys want to be able to see. We all know that Aaron Rodgers is not about to lose his job. That's number one. Number two, he took his team to the NFC Championship last year. And so when you look at his amount of production, and we always know that Aaron Rodgers loves to play big ball, and he usually plays big ball when somebody challenges him, and this is a challenge, so consider it a challenge, and I expect for him to be able to come out and relax, R-E-L-A-X, everybody who has something to say, and he's going to do his thing.
Man, I hate to do it. Pains me to disagree with you again, Takeo. But I do. And here's why. I do disagree. I think it does create a divide. But I'll take it a little step further, okay? the divide isn't the locker room as it applies to Jordan Love and Aaron Rodgers. The divide here is the decision to move up in the draft and draft this young quarterback, Jordan Love, to come in with that high of a draft pick, all right? There's this thing, and we'll all agree as former players, when one wins, when the team wins, everybody wins. So everybody's able to benefit, whether it's getting a better situation in Green Bay, whether it takes you to greener pastures somewhere else. If the team is winning, then you're eating, all right? What was their last game last season? Let me think. They were one game away from going to the Super Bowl last year. One game away, and if they have some more, weapons for A-Rod, you may go to the Super Bowl. Who knows, right? But here's what I'm starting to think to myself, right? In looking at this divide, people in that locker room are saying, what is the first name? Whose name is going to be the first name you say when you talk about the success or failure of this team? Aaron Rodgers. Those people that feel that way are feeling some type of way about the front office of the Green Bay Packers. The divide is going to come from the guys who are looking at their fearless leader in Aaron Rodgers, who has always delivered when he's not injured, the wins. This is going to help me. So I'm not looking at Jordan Love like I got a problem and a beef with Jordan Love. The divide is not there. The divide is what we would say the company man who's like, look, hey, we're here, Green Bay Packer for now. They're going to make the decisions versus the guys that say, no, if we ain't got A-Rod, we don't have a chance. Y'all need to make sure A-Rod is in a good place. That, to me, is where the divide, whether knowingly or unconsciously, is going to take place in that locker room, is the decision to almost basically compromise and minimize what Aaron Rodgers represents to that team by doing what you did and bringing Jordan Love in with that pick.
This certainly can divide. Let me say it quickly. I've been in this situation before. Two things from a player's perspective that really gets you hot is, one, that they're not playing the right guys, and two, that management didn't address the right positions, and Green Bay didn't do that in the draft. So now you got an Aaron Rodgers who's going to go out there once again undermanned, one game away from being in the Super Bowl, and you didn't address our needs. If you're sitting there thirsty and somebody comes up to you with an empty water bottle, you're pissed. You're sitting there right now knowing we need one thing, and you can't even give us that one thing? Come on, a wide receiver, draft one. Get one in free agency that is top-notch. Neither were addressed. So, yeah, when they hit adversity, when they hit that wall, and they realize the reason we hit this wall is because we don't have the weapons around us, you know when you're losing, the bickering starts, and it's going to happen in Green Bay. Coming up, we'll give you our latest approval rating for Jameis Winston. And Uncle Jimmy is in the house to tell us what he thinks of Jameis's confidence. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Marcellus Wiley here, joined now by Uncle Jimmy. And Uncle Jimmy, Jameis Winston still thinks he's one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game. You like this confidence?
Hey, man, Jameis Winston said that he was one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. What time he talking about? Okay? These are some real sensitive times we going through right now, okay? So I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to tell you now, Uncle Jimmy going to try to be real CP on how I address this regarding this issue, right? Yeah, man, look at me. Let me explain something to you, man. You do understand that Jameis Winston went to Florida State, all right? All right. Now, while in Florida State, he was accused of a lot of things. But one thing he was never accused of, going to Columbia. Okay? You understand what I'm trying to say?
Stop.
Hey, man, this boy is a few French fries shy of a Happy Meal, Marcellus. This here is what your grandmama meant when she said, now, you know that that boy's elevator don't go all the way to the top floor. You be like, Grandma, what that mean? She be like, let's just put it like this. He ain't the sharpest bowling ball in the shed, okay? Man, I'm just trying to tell you something, man. Jameis Winston is just dumb. Not some dumb, just plumb dumb. For no reason.